listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is time for Historically Speaking, our friend Mark Blasey in studio from Concordia Historical Institute. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Andy.
Good to have you in studio morning. And, well, we have something historically to speak about today.
We do have something historically to speak about. Yes. Yes.
Well, what do you have for us today? Usually you bring something timely.
Well, it segues into what we currently are experiencing here as far as civil government is concerned. We've just had the Republican and now are finishing up the Democratic conventions for selecting nominees for president of the United States. And we also have had our convention in the LCMS and also now have a president as well. And yesterday being the funeral for Dr. Bowman, who was also president of the Synod as well as of Concordia Seminary, I thought that we would talk about an online exhibit that we do have at CHI. It's on our website. It's in the exhibits area, and it's about all the presidents of the LCMS.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. So this is an online exhibit.
Yes, it is.
What is an online exhibit?
Sometimes what we will do is when we have an exhibit that we only want to show online, it's not going to appear in one of our museums or anything like that. So we just go ahead and post things online. We did that with the Jan Hus exhibit that we have online. So that was the only way that you could see this. We also have this then where we want to keep something available for people to be able to see things that are timely for them or things they might want to know about. Maybe they were not able to attend an exhibit that we did have. We might put those online so that people can see some of the pictures. We will be doing that with our Papua New Guinea exhibit. We will have pictures online from the exhibit so people can see who are not able to attend.
Well, this is pretty neat. I'm checking it out now.
Good.
Wow. We've only had how many?
13.
13 presidents.
President Harrison is our 13th.
Wow. In the life of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and the Synod is about 100 and...
Yeah, I didn't
something.
Do the math.
100 and something. I forgot. I just read it not too long ago. So it's been a little while, but 13
yes,
presidents. So what do you have to share about these presidents?
Well, I think for people, very often we view presidents as being kind of above other people. They have certain qualifications that put them there, and that is certainly true. They have organizational skills, preaching skills. We often think about that, but every single one of our presidents has come from the same place that all of us come from. We come through the font. And we come to the church
Indeed.
And become part of the church. And so these men who have served us as presidents of the LCMS have been chosen by their peers to go ahead and lead us, not only as examples mm-hmm. of Christian living, but also then as leaders, both amongst ourselves and overseas as well. That has been true ever since the beginning of the Synod. We needed assistance from overseas to start filling pulpits because we did not have enough men here, so we went overseas. And since that day, we have been constantly going overseas to make contacts with individuals, to make sure that Christ's message goes out to the church, and that is one of the things that our presidents do.
Now, I recognize I should know more of this history than I do, but that's why you're here, to teach me. Certainly Walther, we
Correct.
Know, we talk about CFW Walther quite a bit.
Yes.
But there are 13 presidents, things that you know about each president or kind of the things that each president might've been remembered for.
I was thinking of that because very often we go ahead and say like, what's a signature thing
right.
for a person when they do something? Obviously, we've got a wide gamut of experience for a lot of our presidents. Some are authors. Some are editors for magazines or periodicals. Some would be in charge of different commissions or boards before they obtained the presidency. Some were chaplains.
Mm-hmm.
Served an extensive period of time in the congregation. We don't often think about that as them being pastors. We often think of them as just being the presidents. But for a good period of time, the presidents of the Synod still maintained a pastorate and served that. When they started changing that over to being a full-time presidency, then that did change. Although I will say that President Harrison did want to go ahead and maintain a pastoral presence, and so that's why he asked for that to be able to be in place. And so he is.
Looking at just noticing here that how the attire has changed over time as well. Looking at the collars, you know, CFW Walther and FCD Winneken had the
Well, only Winneken in our picture. Winneken is the one who has a Befkin on.
I was going to ask what that's called.
Yeah, that's called a Befkin. He has one. Walther's is not. His is just a regular collar that he has. And many of the pictures that we do have online are of them just in regular street attire. A few of them do have their collars on. Dr. Bowman actually does have his vestments on. That was the picture that we had on at the time. So that's what we put on.
Yeah, that's interesting. So,
as far as signature things, I mean, a lot of times with our short period of time, I guess some of the things to be noted is in terms of authorship, we've been asked the question about who, besides Walther, who we know wrote an awful lot, who would be another person that wrote a lot? Certainly Franz Pieper did write a lot in coming out with his Christian Dogmatics text, which is still used today in our seminaries. But there are others who ended up writing more in terms of correspondence with individuals, back and forth. Today, for us, you know, email, that's our way of communication. But and that is a challenge for us at CHI in order to be able to maintain those communications that they're writing. But in the older days, it was always by paper and pen and typewriter and sending things in that fashion and having personal notes written on these letters and sent to people.
Isn't it funny how today that seems like writing something with a pen and paper seems so laborious?
Oh, yes.
Seems like, that would take forever. It would take so long. We're so adept to electronic communication. So Walther, CFW Walther, first president, then FCD Winneken.
Right.
H.C. Schwann.
President Schwann, a lot of people now, we don't call it this so much anymore, but one of the things that he's noted for is the catechism. Very often, it used to be called the Blue Catechism that came out in 1943. That one was very often referred to as the Schwann Catechism. He didn't actually write the portion of the catechism itself. That's obviously from Luther. But the questions and answers portion, which we all have now, that was something that he went ahead and wrote a new one for. A historically speaking thing to that is I ran across something in our archives, which apparently the final product was not what he submitted. It was radically changed, and he disliked it so much that he didn't want to have his name attached to it. And yet that's what it has become known as. The catechism. And then the other thing that he's very often noted for is for introducing Christmas trees into churches. His church in Cleveland was one that he went ahead and introduced and having a Christmas tree. It was not the first one in the United States. That actually went to Johann Millenberg from the Wisconsin Synod. But he maintained his and put it out, even though he became severely criticized in the newspapers about having this pagan symbol in the church and that shouldn't be allowed and so forth. But he maintained it. And very often I don't know of a church that doesn't have a Christmas tree in it around Christmas time.
Yeah, even if it's, you know, might be in the narthex or
correct.
Somewhere else.
Yeah.
Quite often with chrismans.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
All right, so you mentioned Pieper, who had written Christian Dogmatics, which is, as you pointed out, still used as a text in theological education today for seminarians.
And he, as Walther, also, they were president as well as seminary professor at the same time. So that's why it became such a burden to them. They went through a lot of health issues because of that.
Fotenhauer.
President Fotenhauer is kind of the span between our German origins in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and moving over to English. He was a missionary to begin with in the Northwest Territory, which would be up in Minnesota. That's really what was at the time. But he was the one who spanned that gap between changing from German over to English speaking, and then bringing in the English Synod into the Missouri Synod, which is now the English District. So that's what he is noted for. Unfortunately, we do not have a lot of things of writings from Pfotenhauer, just because his will designated that a lot of his personal correspondence would be burned.
Now, he was present during the time that many congregations here in the Midwest began. I know my home congregation was around 1919, I think. So he was president during that time.
Right.
All right. So after Pfotenhauer, we have
President Behnken. President Behnken was a very long-serving person. And if you, his dates are, of service are from 1935 to 1962. So you can think of all the things that were transpiring at that time. For Pfotenhauer, it was World War One, and what that meant because of that changeover from German to English. For Behnken, it was World War Two, and then also through Korea. So he had to go ahead and deal with a number of issues where we were trying to send out a lot of men overseas to fight in wars for our country. And so he had to go ahead and have ministry to them. The armed forces became much bigger at that point, and our Army-Navy Commission became much bigger underneath his presidency. And he also ended up introducing something which was a radio program that he actually did. He was kind of at the early stages of doing that when radio started coming out.
And then after Behnken?
Then Dr. Harms. His was a very short term. He was only a president from 1962 to 1969. And if you can think about the amount of turmoil that was taking place in the United States during the 60s with the civil rights movement and people advocating against the Vietnam War, he was the one who was in place to kind of shepherd the Synod through that. It was not an easy task. He was very criticized for being a little too soft on individuals sometimes for the stances that they would take. But he did maintain his presidency. He was from Texas, and so he went ahead and maintained that as well.
And then after him?
Then Dr. Preuss, J.A.O. Preuss, he became president. Many of the seminary presidents have been graduates of Concordia Seminary. In terms of Dr. Preuss, he went to Luther Seminary instead and went through there because he was from the Norwegians to begin with, from Minnesota. But then he also then, at that time, we were in fellowship and we would work together on things. But he became president. And obviously, the most noted thing that he's noted for is during our tumultuous times during the walkout, and also then having to deal with the things that were going on at the conventions. We had many contentious conventions during that period of time. So he was the one who was the shepherd for that time period. And then after him, Dr. Bowman. Who we just had his funeral yesterday, who then carried on beyond that and in a way had to try and help the Synod rebuild itself from the fracturing that was taking place and still in some cases does take place. But he was the one who ended up laying down principles for biblical interpretation, for the confessions and so forth, for being able to shepherd that through, as well as a lot of international things that started taking place. After Dr. Bowman, then Dr. Barry was made president. He served from 1992 to 2001. Dr. Barry had a lot of mission experience. He was a mission executive before he came to office. And so that's why one of his big emphasis was to go ahead and get the message out, to proclaim Christ and go ahead and put missionaries out in the field and make the message known. That's the one thing that Dr. Barry is noted for, as well as his series, What About? He wrote a number of pamphlets that were like the doctrines of the church, and so went ahead and came out with that. Then after him, Dr. Barry was the first one who actually died in office. All the others before that had been out of office. And Dr. Barry died in office in 2001. Dr. Kuhn, who was his first vice president then, assumed the presidency, but only for a short period of time, from the very end of March until August when the new convention took place, in which case then Dr. Kieschnick came in. I will have to say, on more of a personal note, I was not at Concordia Historical Institute at the time, but I've been told that Dr. Kuhn would come over quite often to CHI to go ahead and talk to us and see how things were going. And so CHI holds him in very high regard for his short period of time, mm-hmm. and yet his concern for CHI and its work.
Yeah, just March to August of 2001.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Right.
And as you pointed out, President Kieschnick.
President Kieschnick came yesterday. Yes, he was at Dr. Bowman's funeral, and he actually preached the sermon yesterday. Dr. Kieschnick was noted for his ablaze movement and mm-hmm. being able to go ahead and try and get the message out in that way to congregations and trying to... We did have a period there... during Dr. Kieschnick's, where we seem to be pulling back a little bit from our missionary emphasis that had been started underneath Dr. Barry. We also experienced a lot of funding issues where we went ahead and didn't have as many funds available, and that was partly then why we ended up pulling out missionaries and so forth, and the change in the missionary structure and how those things were being done.
Well, then in North America, in the United States, mm-hmm. 2008 was when the economy just tanked.
Right, exactly.
Here too. So
yeah.
That was one of the first things I
right,
noticed.
That, yes, and he had obviously no control over that. So
yeah, and then after President Kieschnick, now President Harrison, elected in 2010.
And I would say the signature thing for President Harrison is trying to reach out in missionary ways. We've seen a lot more missionaries go out from the Synod and trying to go to these different areas and also build relationships with other Lutheran churches around the world. During his time, we've had a lot more of the churches in Africa and Europe who we've made contacts with and joined, tried to make fellowship with, conversations to do things and so forth. So that's what I would say his signature thing is.
Well, this is a nifty little exhibit right here online. You can learn a lot of history that way and, getting the chance to talk with you about it too. You're just like a walking encyclopedia.
Oh.
of LCMS history. Some other online exhibits, you mentioned the Jan Hus.
Right.
Reformer, and I'll have to check that one out too. His history fascinates me too.
Right.
Kind of the proto-reformer.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yes. We are going to be putting on more of the ones that we've had in the past. We're talking about putting up the Chaplin exhibit online that we had. As I mentioned, we are also going to be putting up the Papua New Guinea exhibit now. Somewhat timely, although sadly, Bob Kranke, who did the paintings for the exhibit, he just recently died, as did Dr. Hintze, who also just died, and he has many artifacts that are there as well. That's why we want to go ahead and put this online and be able to showcase that and mention the fact of what they were able to do for the missions in Papua New Guinea.
Online exhibits at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org. And what's the new exhibit? The medals, right?
Right. That we're going to be disassembling our Papua New Guinea exhibit after Dr. Harmeling comes back from vacation. We'll be taking pictures of everything so we can do the online exhibit.
You let him go on vacation?
Oh, yes. Everyone needs a vacation. Even Jesus said, come away with me to a private
right,
place.
Right.
That's right. But then, yes, we will go ahead and then be assembling the new exhibit. Hopefully, we'll have it available, I think, in February is what they're looking at of 2017, so that it's available before the actual event.
That'd be a great time for a little field trip.
Oh, yes.
Take a field trip, come see the medals, and many of these are from the time of the replicas of the time of the Reformation?
Many of these are our own copies of things uh-huh. that were produced, so they're the actual medals themselves. We will also be pulling out many of our rare books and putting those in the display, as well as we've invited Concordia Seminary and their rare book collection to be able to come over, because they're going to be doing some renovating, so
right.
they won't be able to display them. So we've invited them to come over as well.
Very good. What constitutes a rare book?
The way I remember it from working over at the seminary library was anything before 1750.
That would be rare.
Yeah. That and if very few copies were made.
Right, right. Mark Blesey, always great to talk with you. Thanks for coming over and sharing some great history with us today.
You are welcome, Andy.
Coming up in just a little bit, morning prayer. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO.